Welcome to the second hour's reading of the Midland Reporter-Telegram and the Odessa American. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand at recordinglibrary.org.
Hello, this is April reading the Midland Reporter-Telegram for Sunday, June 7, 2020. Viewpoints. Those invited to bond meetings should speak up. Midland ISD leaders are there to listen to what opponents have to say. By Stuart Doreen. S. Doreen at HearstNP.com. If you're one of those invited to a Midland ISD meeting about the opposition to the November bond but have not yet attended, here is some advice. Come with something to say. The district wants to hear your two cents. After attending the first two of the five sessions, which were last week, one thing is obvious. Midland ISD staff and board members aren't there to lecture. They really aren't there to say much of anything. Midland ISD leaders are there to listen, and my hat is off to them. These have been constructive sessions, at least in the view of this spectator. Even facing sharp criticism, district leaders haven't made it about them. They have made it about the process. I want to thank Midland ISD officials for allowing me to attend these meetings. I recognize they could have very well said these meetings were not meant for public consumption. They also could have said they are not open meetings, because they do not involve four or more board members. But they didn't. Superintendent Orlando Riddick and Board President Rick Davis deserve credit for erring on the side of being transparent. Transparency is allowing a member of the media, experienced in covering education in Midland, to sit there and take notes, especially when some of that information might not be flattering. And because of their gesture, I will wait until all meetings are held before providing a report about the disagreements presented to the board members and staff leaders. I will not publish names of the people communicating with district leaders unless I receive permission ahead of time, but a full account will be provided. It would have been easy to take these comments and report after each meeting, which would create more conflict and wouldn't be fair to the process. That isn't my intention, and for what it's worth, that is not what I expect those providing their testimony would want anyway. The run-up to the next bond issue will be a hard slog over a long period of time. And just like it was in November, we need all information out there for people to consider so the best decision can be made for education in Midland. Since we are talking about communication, this newspaper will make every effort to report dutifully if similar meetings are held with those who supported the bond. Those still waiting for their town hall meeting, here are the questions district officials want you to answer. What would you like to see included again as part of any future bond proposal? What would you not like to see included again as part of any future bond proposal? What would you like to see included as part of any future bond proposal that was not included in the last proposal? What thoughts do you have on how the process in formulating a future bond proposal should work? What thoughts do you have on how the community should be educated and informed about the components of any future bond proposal? But the reality is, you will have an opportunity to address anything education-related in Midland right now. Might a Midland ISD leader attempt to steer you back toward the bond and their questions? Sure, but ultimately, they will be there to listen. In need of assistance? Commentary. Help the Field's Edge Finish the Road Home. By John Mark Eccles. The Field's Edge. Growing up on a caliche road in Midland is a fond memory for me. We spent hours riding bikes with the neighbors, skinning knees and working out childhood disagreements. Even as a young child, I always knew we were getting close to the home when I could hear the crunch of gravel beneath the car's tires. Meadowview Lane was the path to that loving sanctuary during my formative years. As Midland grows, new roads are needed, and older ones need repair. We get frustrated with orange cones and detour signs. Sure, we don't want to risk potholes, but we also don't love being inconvenienced by construction, or what big city folks call everyday driving. There is nothing particularly flashy about roads. We often take them for granted until we notice the wear and tear, but roads are what connect us. These routes help make Midland a city. Without them, there is no way home. Home is a place of safety, belonging, and orientation. Home is a location somewhere, but we have to know how to get there. In the past, we used a map and a compass. These tools are foreign to my generation, but the compass rose has always had significance to me. In my youth, it symbolized finding my way. I had one tattooed on my back after spending a month in Wyoming on horseback and reading books like Into the Wild. When I encountered Jesus at age 22, the meaning of the compass rose changed for me, because my true north had been corrected. This passage from the Bible best describes my new bearings. Trust in the Lord with all thine heart, and lean not unto thy own understanding. In all thy ways acknowledge him, and he shall direct thy paths. Proverbs 3:5-6, King James Version. When the Field's Edge began in 2016, we had no idea how long and winding this path would be. As an eternal optimist, I wrote a blog then saying that I expected to live on site at our tiny home village by October 2017. Lord knows that if I could see the whole mountain we'd have to climb, I'd have packed it in. There were so many twists and discouraging switchbacks along the way, but each time when we couldn't see the way forward, our path opened up and became as clear and beautiful as the West Texas sky, revealing something better than we could have imagined. We have grown in our understanding of what it means to trust in the Lord to direct our way. I am writing today to acknowledge him for all that he has done to make the Field's Edge a reality and trusting that he will continue to guide us. In 3 years, we have been given 23.6 acres for the Field's Edge to call home. We've walked alongside our currently homeless brothers and sisters who have probably thought we were crazy to try to do all this. Finding Home in Boomtown, a documentary about our mission, has helped to share the vision with our community. We have walked through planning and zoning, site planning and design with tremendous support from the City of Midland and the team at Park Hill Smith & Cooper. We've trained 2 future Field's Edge therapy llamas. We have had the privilege of lifting 3 women and 1 man off the streets and into RVs. We have started our Glean Up Litter program to provide low-barrier, dignified employment and case management to currently homeless people to lift them up. Thanks to our community's continued generosity, I am so pleased to report that we have reached our initial capital goal of $3.8 million. We are overjoyed to have met this tremendous goal, but there is still work to do. We are asking you to partner with us in literally building the road home. We have an additional stretch goal of $250,000 to build Chola Road and connect our village to the southern extension of Loop 250 and the city water pipeline alongside it. Our aim for the Field's Edge is to be a place where Midlanders can serve and build relationships with one another. With your investment, this road will welcome our formerly homeless neighbors as Midlanders with full access to our city. Your gift will give them the confidence and ability to welcome you into their homes. Can our soon-to-be neighbors count on your help to build their road home? Sometimes I need to pinch myself to make sure I am not dreaming. I am astounded by the support and encouragement we have received. The way our community has come alongside makes me incredibly proud to be a native Midlander. There's just something special about this place we call home. Meanwhile, the last few months have tested this great city. COVID-19, the price of oil, the killing of fellow image-bearer George Floyd and outcries for justice, divisions and lawlessness, the uncertainty, fear, and pain that all of these trials have caused. The brokenness of our world is on full display, and we all need hope. Now, maybe more than ever, we need to build roads and bridges back to one another to remind ourselves of the God-given dignity that we all inherently possess, even when we strongly disagree with each other or don't appear to have anything in common. It might seem like too much to overcome, and it is for us on our own, but there is a hope that is unfading and eternal in the Lord Jesus Christ that is making all things new. The Field's Edge is a picture of His redemptive grace. We've learned from our homeless friends that we won't end their homelessness by building them houses. What we will do is end their homelessness by creating a forged community around them and cultivating home together. Join us, and together we will show the world that Midland, Texas is a model city of brotherly love and radical hospitality. Together, we all can travel the road home. For more information, online, http://www.thefieldsedge.org. Community health care is a pillar of economic growth. Travis Stice, Diamondback Energy CEO. We find ourselves living in unprecedented times, a phrase not uncommon to hear daily. Certainly, the challenges in the oil and gas industry in the last 2 months are also unprecedented, regardless of whether you're an industry veteran like me or an early career professional. We also have a challenge coming to determine the course of both maintaining and also growing quality healthcare in Midland. However, I am confident that in the end we will persevere on all these fronts. The residents of Midland are resilient. We have met challenges and made tough decisions in the past. On July 14, the voters of the Midland County Hospital District will get a chance to speak to the future and ensure our community's health care resources for generations. COVID-19 shut down most of the world economy, crushing energy demands and leading to a major oil surplus and the collapse of commodity prices. As we begin to see the light at the end of the pandemic tunnel, the economies of the United States and the rest of the world will regain their vitality, and demand for Permian oil will return. As we plan for the return of drilling and production activity, our attention must also return to the supporting community infrastructure necessary for the future. A key pillar of that infrastructure is high-quality health care. Midland Health has been committed to building our community's health care system for decades by taking advantage of the federal funding available through various Medicaid supplemental payment programs. The team at Midland Health has built a system of community health care services that is more comprehensive than before. Access to physicians in this community never has been better, and recruitment and retention efforts continue to expand availability. The ability of Midland Health to continue to finance and support our vital healthcare infrastructure is being challenged by changes in federal policy that will severely restrict supplemental Medicaid funding in Texas. Physician recruitment and retention, along with other non-hospital services, cost Midland Health more than $40 million per year. The coming reductions in federal funding, expected to reach $38 million per year by 2024, will make it impossible to sustain that level of support unless an alternative revenue source can be established. The Board of Directors of Midland County Hospital District has identified a countywide sales tax of 0.25%, 1/4%, as the best available source of local support to replace the lost Medicaid funding. By choosing sales tax funding instead of focusing on property tax increases, the board is recognizing the importance of spreading the cost of local healthcare infrastructure to everyone who benefits. If the quarter-cent sales tax passes, everyone who buys taxable goods or services in Midland County will contribute to the support of the hospital district. Texas state law exempts groceries and prescription medication from being subject to this tax. Allowing reductions or elimination of these medical services moves us in the opposite direction of our community's goal of making Midland a regional destination for healthcare and hampers the ability to attract and retain top talent in all industries. We simply cannot let that happen. This is also not a decision that we can defer. Cuts in Medicaid funding begin this fall, and Midland Health will have to make immediate reductions in its budget to offset this shortage. This very small sales tax can make the difference between maintaining and growing the outstanding healthcare system we have built over the past several years, or watching it disappear. Our region is sensitive to the price of oil. However, if oil is $3 or $100 per barrel, we all want high quality healthcare for our families. Your vote can make all the difference. My appeal to you is to get informed on this critical issue, not just opinionated. There is a big difference between the two. I hope we can agree. Being informed is the key to understanding the challenges we face together as Midlanders. For more information, go to http://www.sayyestohealthcare.com/about.html. While Election Day is July 14, you can vote early starting on June 29. I hope you will join me and vote for Proposition A. Thank you. Travis Dice also is a trustee of Midland Memorial Hospital.
Hi, this is Linda. I'm reading the Odessa American for Sunday, June 7th, 2020. VFW reaches out to aid returning soldiers by Tony Venegas. Since becoming commander of the Veterans of Foreign Wars, VFW, Post 4372 in Odessa, Charlie Cobes has been looking for ways to help veterans and those troops in active duty and give back to the community. As the effects of the COVID-19 pandemic continue to take shape, an opportunity recently presented itself for the VFW posts across Texas to do all of those things and more. An Army unit that was stationed in South Korea is returning to the United States after completing a scheduled 6-month deployment. That deployment was extended due to the virus by nearly 4 months and presented multiple challenges for the soldiers abroad. The unit is required to undergo a 14-day quarantine upon return, and most of them have a place to go. 173 of those soldiers do not, and will go through quarantine at base housing in Fort Hood. In order to help them, VFW posts across the state are banding together to help those soldiers with a drive for new and clean fitted twin bed sheets, bath towels, and pillows. Cobes is leading the effort in the Permian Basin and says this drive is a way to reach out and show what the organization does to help others. Number one, it gives them clean sheets, and it gives them peace of mind that the community still cares about them. On the big note, the guys who are coming back are eligible for this organization. Hopefully they'll start to see what has happened, and we can get them to see what we can do for the community. Cobes has put together a number of programs annually, including an annual Thanksgiving dinner for the MHMR group and a flag raising and prayer breakfast that took place Saturday in remembrance of D-Day. The VFW also uses funds raised to pay the electric bill of the Boy Scouts building located next to the post. This latest effort has plenty of meaning for Cobes, whose ultimate goal with the post is to give veterans a place to go and be together. "This is a local community that comes in here," he said. "Weather gets bad, we always have our doors open. We always try to get some kind of food set out to people who need it. If their power's out, they know they have some place warm where we can take care of them. It's a good group of people that'll band together and help each other." So far, Cobes says that the biggest local contribution the post has received so far is a $500 donation from a company in Greenwood. That allowed the post to bulk purchase the needed items for the troops. And even though Cobes has since been medically discharged, the oath of enlistment he took is something that drives him every day. "Each and every one of us took an oath to defend this country from enemies, foreign and domestic, and no one has ever rescinded that oath from any of us," he said. "It's something that a lot of us still take to heart." As of Friday, VFW Post 4372 has collected about 24 pillows. Cobes added that those willing to donate can drop them off at the VFW by Tuesday, June 9th. This is done to allow the post to take the items down to the collection point in Harker Heights. Donations can be dropped off at the post located at 208 East VFW Lane in Odessa, as well as the VFW post in Midland. Online Purchase Scams by Heather Massey, Regional Director of the Better Business Bureau in the Permian Basin. Online shopping has risen in the past few years as more retailers have improved the virtual shopping experience for their customers. However, more online shopping means more opportunities for scammers to target consumers and businesses alike. In the time of COVID-19, online purchases are more common than ever, creating even more opportunity for scammers selling counterfeit or fake masks, sanitation items, and health products. For buyers, online purchases come with a risk of losing money to items that are counterfeit or never arrive. Giving credit card information to an untrustworthy website could lead to identity theft. For businesses, online purchase scams can mean selling to scammers using fraudulent cards. While businesses and credit card companies alike are increasing measures to prevent fraud, it is still a possibility that could lead to trouble for businesses that unknowingly process stolen cards through their payment system. Better Business Bureau, serving the heart of Texas, offers this advice to consumers and businesses to protect against online fraud. For consumers, be alert to product claims. Consumers will search for the best products and deals now more than ever. Scammers will try to lure them in with big claims stating their products will work instantly or cure ailments. Use your best judgment to determine if a claim is legitimate. Remember, if it sounds too good to be true, it probably is. Look for contact info. Search the business website for contact information. This information will allow you to reach out to the business directly if there is a problem with your purchase. A lack of contact information is often a red flag of an online purchase scam. Search for reputable retailers. A trustworthy business will deliver quality products on time. Many businesses are communicating with their customers to alert them to any shipping and delivery delays caused by COVID-19. The best way to find a trustworthy company is to read reviews from past customers, ask friends and family for recommendations, and search business profiles at bbb.org. Additionally, more and more small businesses are offering online ordering, which means you may be able to find a small company you've done business with before. It is important to find a secure website to keep your credit card safe from being used fraudulently. For businesses, know the red flags. There are several red flags that could indicate fraud in an online purchase. These include unusually large purchases, repeated requests for rush orders on high-priced items, multiple payment cards from the same IP address, and more. Generally, fraud is indicated by several of these signs rather than just one of them. Be diligent. If you notice multiple red flags, take action to protect your business and your customers. Contact the credit card provider to report suspicious activity. Try to reach the phone number provided or call the merchant bank to verify the billing address. Train your staff. Put policies in place to make credit card purchases more secure. Train your staff on implementing these policies effectively and recognizing the red flags. With online shopping playing an important role in the day-to-day lives of consumers, keeping businesses and consumers safe is key. For more tips on avoiding fraud, visit us at bbb.org. Breaking Bread awarded $10,000 donation. Midland. Liberty Mutual and Safeco Insurance recently announced a $10,000 donation to Breaking Bread, nominated by Dustin Patak of Dustin Patak Insurance as part of an emergency community support grant to help independent agents give back to their local community during the COVID-19 crisis. The donation will go directly to Breaking Bread, a nonprofit organization that strives to foster community through feeding those in need and developing relationships with those served. My team and I have recognized the hard work and dedication performed by Breaking Bread during this pandemic, and we are incredibly thankful for Liberty Mutual and Safeco Insurance for stepping up to the plate and providing extra funds to help the community when we need it most, Dustin Patak of Dustin Patak Insurance said. Breaking Bread has been significantly impacted by the COVID-19 crisis, and the $10,000 donation will help them continue to make a difference to the community they serve. Breaking Bread will use the $10,000 grant to meet the high demand of food costs so they can continue preparing daily meals for community members in need as they have faced a large spike in unemployment and homelessness. The goal of the emergency community support grants is to help our independent agents make an immediate impact during this critical time in the local communities where we live and work. Alexis Holzer, Liberty Mutual and Safeco Insurance Independent Agent Giving Program Manager, said. The Midland community can get involved and give back to Breaking Bread by volunteering or donating to the nonprofit. For more information, visit breakingbreadkitchen.org. For more information about Liberty Mutual and Safeco Insurance, visit www.agentgiving.com. For more information about Safeco Insurance, visit www.libertymutualinsurance.com or www.safeco.com. For more information about Dustin Patak Insurance, visit www.dustinpatakinsurance.com or call 432-218-8379.
This is Kay, reading the Odessa American for Sunday, June 7th, 2020. Opinion. Some facts worth knowing. Imagine that you are an unborn spirit in heaven. God condemns you to a life of poverty, but will permit you to choose the country in which you will spend your life. Which country would you choose? I would choose the United States of America. A recent study by Just Facts, an excellent source of factual information, shows that after accounting for income, charity, and non-cash welfare benefits, such as subsidized health care, housing, food stamps, and other assistance programs, the poorest 20% of Americans consume more goods and services than the national averages for all people in the world's most affluent countries. This includes the majority of countries that are members of Organization for Economic Cooperation and Development, including its European members. The Just Facts study concludes that if the U.S. poor were a nation, then it would be one of the world's richest. As early as 2010, 43% of all poor households owned their own homes. The average home owned by persons classified as poor by the Census Bureau is a three-bedroom house with 1.5 baths, a garage, and a porch or patio. 80% of poor households have air conditioning. The typical poor American has more living space than the average non-poor individual living in Paris, London, Vienna, Athens, and other cities throughout Europe. 97% of poor households have one or more color televisions, half of which are connected to cable, satellite, or a streaming service. Some 82% of poor families have one or more smartphones. 89% own microwave ovens, and more than a third have an automatic dishwasher. Most poor families have a car or truck, and 43% own two or more vehicles. Most surveys on U.S. poverty are deeply flawed because poor households greatly underreport both their income and non-cash benefits, such as health care benefits provided by Medicaid, free clinics, and the Children's Health Insurance Program, nourishment provided by food stamps, school lunches, school breakfasts, soup kitchens, food pantries, the Women, Infants, and Children Program, and homeless shelters. We hear and read stories such as, real wage growth is actually falling, and since 2000, wage growth has barely grown. But we should not believe it. Ask yourself, what is the total compensation that I receive from my employer? If you included only your money wages, you would be off the mark anywhere between 30% and 38%. Total employee compensation includes mandated employer expenses, such as Social Security and Medicare. Other employee benefits include retirement and health care benefits, as well as life insurance, short-term and long-term disability insurance, vacation leave, tuition reimbursement, and bonuses. There is incentive for people who want more of their compensation in a non-cash form, simply because of the different tax treatment. The bottom line is that prior to the government shutdown of our economy in the wake of the coronavirus pandemic, Americans were becoming richer and richer. The question before us now is how to get back on that path. Speaking of the COVID-19 pandemic, Just Facts has a couple of interesting takes in an article by its co-founder, James D. Agresti, and Dr. Andrew Glenn, titled, "Anxiety from Reactions to COVID-19 Will Destroy at Least 7 times More Years of Life Than Can Be Saved by Lockdowns." Scientific surveys of U.S. residents have found that the mental health of about 1/3 to 1/2 of all adults has been substantially compromised by government reactions to the COVID-19 pandemic. There are deaths from non-psychological causes, such as government-mandated and personal decisions to delay medical care, which has postponed tumor removals, cancer screenings, heart surgeries, and treatment for other ailments that could lead to early death if not addressed in a timely manner. Interesting, and sadly enough, New York State enacted one of the strictest lockdowns in the U.S., but has 22 times the death rate of Florida, which had one of the mildest lockdowns. As I pointed out in a recent column, intelligent decision-making requires one to not only pay attention to the benefits of an action, but to its costs as well. Williams, Walter Williams. Williams is an economics professor at George Mason University and is also a syndicated columnist. Texas View, a path to cutting skyrocketing property tax bills. The Point, we're calling on officials on both sides of the equation to work together on solutions. If you've owned a home in Texas for any amount of time, you've joined thousands who have felt the pinch of skyrocketing property tax bills. And this year, higher appraisals, a stunning 15% hike for some homeowners, are particularly shocking and hard to understand because COVID-19 has tanked the economy, leaving many of us struggling financially to make it through this pandemic. But this unfair process, loaded onto the backs of homeowners, has been going on for a long time. There is something wrong with a system that creates a tax bill so high that folks are forced to consider whether they can afford to stay in their homes. The reality is that our tax bills are the result of a complicated and often confusing set of laws, policies, and procedures. But simply put, there are two sides of the equation, the appraised value and the tax rate. We find ourselves in a constant tug of war with officials on one side saying lower the tax rate, and those on the other side saying lower the appraisal values. And in the middle, homeowners are saddled with the ever-growing tax bills. We're calling on officials on both sides of this situation to work together on some real solutions, and for homeowners to pay close attention to both. Here's how we got here. Senator Paul Bettencourt, the Houston Republican chair of the Property Tax Committee, reminded us that homeowners won't see any results from the much-celebrated reforms that put a 3.5% cap on property tax revenue growth for cities and counties until next year. On top of that, the super-hot Texas economy that existed January 1st, when appraisals at market value are mandated, generated steeply higher appraisals for homeowners than COVID-19 hit. The pre-COVID appraisal situation can't be allowed to stand. City Manager T.C. Broadnax speaks about the City's Equity Indicators Project at the Communities Foundation of Texas in Dallas, Texas, on Friday, October 28, 2019. Lawrence Jenkins, special contributor. We've praised lawmakers for the work they've done to control tax rate revenues, but they also must turn their attention to the appraisal system. The good news is that Betancourt told us that the state is set for a ratio study of property valuations in the fall. It's sort of a report card to gauge the quality and accuracy of appraisals. It's a statistical analysis that compares the appraised value to the market value of a property. That can get at how well appraisal districts are performing. Lawmakers are also pushing for standardized valuation methods across the state to better compare apples to apples on properties. He also encourages homeowners to participate in the process when tax rates are being set by local governments in the summer and early fall. And for some shorter-term relief, if they feel their values are too high, protest. There's evidence that it works. Take Harris County, for example, which had the highest average value increase of 8.75% in the state. It has already settled nearly 60,000 cases below last year's values. And we encourage taxing entities to redouble efforts at payment plans for tax bills and work to give hurting property owners breaks on penalties and interest. Here's an uncomfortable truth. Municipalities need our tax dollars to provide services, but they must take into account that there's only so much homeowners can contribute. Collin County Judge Chris Hill, in one of the fastest growing counties in the country for many years running, operates under the principle that when values go up, the county should reduce its rate accordingly. He hears from homeowners who are frustrated by their high appraisals, but he said it's deceptive of any officials to tell every homeowner to protest, as Dallas County Judge Clay Jenkins recently did, when they can just lower the tax rate. We know it's not that simple. Jenkins proposed lowering Dallas County's rate only to be shot down by commissioners. And while appraisal districts are hamstrung in some ways by inflexible laws, they still must find solutions for a more equitable appraisal system. We've had too much finger-pointing over who's most responsible for our high tax bills. It's time we finally do something about them. There's still time to protest in Dallas and Collin counties this year. Deadline in both counties is June 15th. In Dallas County, informal protests will be handled online through U-File and by phone or by email. Because of concerns about COVID-19, most formal hearings will be handled virtually, likely by one person. In Collin County, no in-person hearings will take place. Online or phone is preferred. Panels will have three deciders. The Dallas Morning News. Odessa's peaceful protests, clear eyes and full hearts. Once again, I find myself beaming with pride as I reflect on the people of West Texas. As some communities across the state and nation are still smoldering from riots, stoked evidently by outside agitators, our corner of West Texas is peaceful and wiser after a pair of peaceful protests in downtown Odessa this week. In both cases, the events were organized by Odessans for Odessans to bring awareness to the unjust and brutal killing of George Floyd last month in Minneapolis. To be clear, there was outrage in the voices of those who marched and protested, understandably so. But by speaking with unity and by working to prevent others from hijacking the protest and turning it into a destructive, violent riot, I believe the voices and the message were heard loudly and clearly. As a lawmaker, I know I heard it. This is how it's supposed to work. This is the Constitution in action. Odessa has given the nation a blueprint and an example to follow. Even if you don't agree with the message, there's no denying that the First Amendment protects the right to freedom of speech and for the people to peacefully assemble. This week's peaceful protests were met with respect and understanding by law enforcement, who went above and beyond to protect and respect the First Amendment rights of those who had something to say. I'm thankful for Chief Mike Gerke in the Odessa Police Department and how officers are taking seriously their oath to protect and serve. You've proven to be heroes once again. I'm grateful my fellow West Texans are peacefully speaking out about injustice. I'm grateful our heroic law enforcement officers are respecting and protecting the right to do so. This level of respect leads to unprecedented dialogue, which allows us to have clearer eyes and fuller hearts. God bless Texas. State Representative Brooks Landgraf. Landgraf serves House District 81, which encompasses Andrews, Ector, Ward, and Winkler counties. Guest View. All Around Us, There Are Helpers, by Laura Bush. Fred Rogers said, "Look for the helpers. You will always find people who are helping." America is full of helpers, and during times of crisis, the desire to help others is strongest. These months have brought unimaginable change to our workplaces, our homes, and of course, our schools. Many parents are working on the front lines or in essential fields, and with the closing of schools and some daycares, parents can be at a loss for child care. Moms and dads who once depended on school to provide breakfast and lunch are now worried if they can put a meal on the table. And children may struggle with emotional uncertainty as their routines have been put on hold. They no longer see their teachers and friends, and their parents juggle work, homeschooling, and trying to remember how to multiply fractions or do long division. Despite the challenging circumstances and the dire headlines we read, there is still reason for hope in our country. Loria Yadin, president and CEO of YMCA Greater Seattle, leads one of more than 500 national YMCA facilities that have sanitized their gyms and converted them into socially distanced daycare centers. First responders, healthcare workers, and other essential employees can send children to the Seattle YMCA at no cost, and other families can pay $45 a day or seek financial aid. YMCA wants to ensure that no parent in any city who is exhausted from work is at a loss for child care. In Maine, teacher Gretchen Lane reads a new book every single day, records it, and loads the video on YouTube. Then she shares it on her Facebook page so parents of her second graders can cuddle up and bond with their child during a daily story time. And since some of her students don't have computer or internet access, she made sure her readings were available on a smartphone. Andrea Restrepo is a fifth grade teacher in Charlotte, North Carolina. When her students left school on Friday, March 13th, none of them knew it would be their last day in the classroom. Andrea took swift action, calling on internet companies to install internet at her students' homes so they could continue with their curriculum. And she organized school supply, grocery, and meal kits for families in need. Her school provided a video career fair to replace the in-person ones students look forward to each spring. Kiara Williams, an English teacher who works in the Los Angeles Unified District, follows up with students who aren't responding or showing up for their online classes. She's been resourceful. When she was unable to communicate with a Spanish-speaking mother of one of her students, Kiara called her native Spanish-speaking grandmother to help translate via a three-way call. And these are just a few of the hundreds of inspirational stories we hear. All around us, there are helpers. Some of them look like those we've recognized as heroes before. Doctors, nurses, firefighters, and police officers. But we found that heroes can also be teachers, store managers sewing masks to fit children, principals who organize community car parades to show students they are still loved, or even a neighbor who picks up groceries so a mom can stay healthy at home with her newborn baby. Now is a great time to teach our children that everyone can be a hero. When your children look back on the impact COVID-19 had on their lives, they won't remember having frozen pizza 3 nights in a row, or that the laundry piled up for a week. They'll remember that you helped them with homework and read to them, that you sat with them for dinner and listened to their concerns, that you had popcorn for movie night, drew with chalk on the sidewalk, or went for a family walk. You can be the hero for your children. Love them, hug them, spend time with them, keep them safe, and tell them that sunny days will return again. Laura Bush is a former First Lady of the United States. This article first appeared in The Catalyst, a journal of ideas from the Bush Institute. It is being distributed by InsideSources.com. Guest View, Americans Rise to the Challenge, by Jay Bott. Every day we seem to get more bad news, more deaths, more infections. When one hot spot gets knocked down, another springs up just as quickly. The news can be dispiriting, but amid the darkness of the COVID-19 pandemic, I've seen bursts of light as Americans rise to the challenge of confronting the virus with strength, empathy, humility, determination, and hope. As a presidential leadership scholar, a collaborative project that spotlights leadership through the lens of the presidential experiences of George W. Bush, Bill Clinton, George H.W. Bush, and Lyndon B. Johnson, I heard firsthand from Presidents Bush and Clinton that our diversity as a nation provides us with strength. I think about the president's words in times like these, when diverse groups of people are coming together with courage and conviction to engage in constructive dialogue and serve our nation. Through video chats and good old-fashioned phone calls, my fellow scholars are catalyzing action and sharing best practices about subjects like delivering telemedicine effectively and deploying gear to the front lines. They are advocating for better policies, providing leadership, and, most important, showing up for and taking care of one another in these hard times. In my capacity as Chief Medical Officer with the American Hospital Association, I had the privilege to work with the incredibly dedicated team at Providence Health when the virus first showed up in Washington State. All hands were on deck as the team redesigned workflows, tapped new supply lines for protective equipment, and instituted new protocols to handle an illness they were still learning about. What's more, the Providence team, alongside with other teams, like one from St. Barnabas Hospital in New York City, generously shared their lessons and successful practices with health teams around the nation. Meanwhile, in Los Angeles, two fellow presidential leadership scholars, Surgeon Anand Annamalai and anesthesiologist Sunny Jha, looked at a shuttered hospital and saw the opportunity to demonstrate leadership and save lives just a few weeks before the first COVID-19 cases were reported in America. St. Vincent's Hospital, one of Los Angeles's oldest, was closed, a victim of its parent company's recent bankruptcy. In March, the state of California stepped in to lease the hospital to handle surge cases of COVID-19 patients, and that's when Anand called on Sunny to join the effort. He said, "We were being tasked with reopening the hospital," Sunny recalls. I said, "With what army?" The army that would ultimately make the reopening of St. Vincent's possible included clinicians, case managers, orderlies, technicians, government officials, and longtime hospital administrators from around Southern California. When they entered the building, the team found cardboard boxes everywhere, filled with the remnants of the former hospital. Less than 1 month later, the new St. Vincent's was ready to accept its first patients. As of this writing, a team of about 500 people work in the facility, caring for some of the toughest COVID cases in America's largest county. It goes without saying that those 500 people are putting themselves at risk. I asked Sonny why he got involved in the project and why he continues to go into the hospital to care for patients. Is it scary? Yes, he acknowledges. Throughout this process, we've all had a degree of fear and anxiety, but it just seemed like the right thing to do. Back in my home state of Illinois, I recently visited Family Christian Health Center, a federally qualified health center just south of Chicago, where I'll be treating patients this summer. Clinics like FCHC are on the front lines of the pandemic, delivering health care to America's most vulnerable, low-income populations. When I arrived at the clinic, I saw Dr. Laverne Barnes, who oversees the clinic's operations, testing a family in their car for coronavirus. Barnes told me that because people are sheltering in place and most of the clinic's operations have gone digital, revenues are down. Barnes considered laying off many members of her staff. Anand, Sonny, and Laverne, they are special people, and their stories remind us that through courage, kindness, intentional connection, and compassion, we can all work to lift our country up to a brighter future. Jay Bott is a presidential leadership scholar and former chief medical officer of the American Hospital Association, who practices internal medicine in Chicago. This article first appeared in The Catalyst, a journal of ideas from the Bush Institute. It is being distributed by InsideSources.com.
Hello, this is Michael. I'm reading from the Odessa American, Friday, June 12, 2020. Cancer from nicotine gum? To Your Good Health by Dr. Keith Roach. Dear Dr. Roach, my wife smoked for many years and finally quit with the help of nicotine gum, that is 4 milligrams each. Since quitting almost 20 years ago, she continues to use about 12 pieces of nicotine gum per day. Does ingesting this much nicotine in this manner put her at risk for developing some type of cancer from the nicotine? Answer: No, nicotine is not carcinogenic, that is to say, cancer-causing. In large doses, it is dangerous, but the doses she is taking are not, at least for a person used to them. Early signs of nicotine toxicity are excess salivation, nausea, and vomiting. There are many toxic substances in tobacco, some of which are cancer-causing. The tobacco does not need to be burned. Chewing tobacco and snuff increase the risk of oral cancer. About half of all people who smoke will die because of smoking-related illnesses. Even one cigarette a day has long-term health risks. Although it's not ideal that she continues to use nicotine gum, and it's not cheap, there is no doubt that the gum is much, much safer for her than continuing to smoke. Asked to practice social distancing, grows aggressive. Dear Abby for Friday, June 12th. Dear Abby, I encountered a frightening man in the hardware store the other day. I was standing at the counter paying for an item when a man behind me came at me, inches from my face, in an aggressive and threatening way. When I asked him if he could please step 6 feet away, he became even more hostile and accused me of asking in the wrong way. In hindsight, I suppose I should have ignored him, but his words shook me. I didn't speak disrespectfully to him. although I was alarmed, I was polite. When I said I was just asking for the required space, he said he was showing me how thoughtless I am because I wasn't wearing a mask or gloves. Neither was he, nor were the employees and some other shoppers. When I pointed that out, he countered even more loudly that I was the problem. I just shook my head and left. As I was leaving, he yelled after me that he hoped I got the virus and that he worked in a hospital. The man was huge, at least double my size. He was clearly going out of his way to threaten me, if not to infect me. I know I should not have responded, but for my own safety, I needed to politely ask him to back away. If I'd had a smartphone, I might have called the police. I go for a walk every day for exercise and shop for necessary groceries. I have experienced people in aisles coming very close to me. I step aside to give space for others. Generally, most people are careful, respectful, and even give a thank you. This man was aggressive for no reason. What should I have done other than just walk away quickly? Threatened in Oakland, California. Dear Threatened, you did the right thing. I seriously doubt the person worked in or even near a hospital, because if he did, he would have taken the proper safety precautions. In these stressful times, people sometimes act out over perceived slights. With someone so angry, aggressive, and clearly looking for trouble, the right thing to do was to get away as quickly and safely as possible. The man was lucky the store management didn't eject him. Dear Abby, several months ago, a friend of mine behaved badly and offended me, and another dinner guest. His wife shut him down fairly quickly. The next day, when I tried to explain to him why what he did was inappropriate, he misinterpreted my comments and, because of his low self-esteem, became offended, even though he was the offensive person. I immediately apologized but got no response. Anyone who understands basic psychology will recognize this defensive and deflective self-defense mechanism for what it was. Abby, these are people I love dearly. Now they no longer speak to me, and I'm at a loss about what to do besides continue to pray for them. Advice? Missing my dearest friends. Dear Missing, your former friend appears to be both aggressive and hypersensitive. Continue praying, but be careful what you pray for, because this person appears to be very high maintenance. Surely you can fill the emptiness with friends who are easier to get along with and who are willing to talk out difficult situations like adults. If you do, I guarantee your life will be less stressful.
Jacqueline Bigger Stars by Madeline Aslan. Note, Bigger Stars is based on the degree of your sun at birth. The sign name is simply a label astrologers put on a set of degrees for convenience. For best results, readers should refer to the dates following each sign. A baby born today has a sun in Gemini and a moon in Pisces. Happy birthday for Friday, June 12, 2020. Optimistic and fun, you weather this year better than most. Even if troubled, you continue to be entertaining. Take some time out for yourself. As soon as you can travel again, you will be happy. If single, you are on a serious search for a mate, and success comes when you are older. If attached, you are happy as clams and never stop adventuring together. Pisces, when they fall in love, they fall deeply. The stars show the kind of day you'll have. 5 dynamic, 4 positive, 3 average, 2 so-so, 1 difficult. Aries, March 21 through April 19. 4 stars. Today begins on an introspective note. You will prefer to spend time alone and away from people. You cherish your solitude. It is a good time to perfect a meditation technique. Write emails and arrange meetings. Tonight, get a good night's sleep. Taurus, April 20 through May 20. 4 stars. Today favors networking. A new circle of friends is developing. There are rewards if you become active in organizations and social groups. This includes community service and political campaigns. Tonight, write down a list of your most important goals and dreams. Gemini, May 21 through June 20. 5 stars. You will be highly visible and making more of an impression than you realize. Some job-related travel for the future is coming up. Update your skills and experiment with creative ideas in connection with your work. Tonight, talk with a lonely elderly female relative. Cancer, June 21 through July 22. 4 stars. Today finds you sharing anecdotes with others in an effort to teach as well as to entertain. This can lead you to assume the role of spiritual advisor. It is a promising time to write for publication, too. Tonight, explore options regarding higher education. Leo, July 23 through August 22. 5 stars. The veil to the other world grows thinner, and a meaningful message from a loved one who has passed on is likely to arrive. You experience a sense of deeper peace regarding the inevitable cycles of death, birth, and rebirth. Tonight, management of debts, expenses. Virgo, August 23 through September 22. 3 stars. A loved one shares ideas about spectacular summer vacation plans that have been put on hold. Cooperation is a must. Others will have plans and projects that will involve you. A legal matter might require your attention. Tonight, you can make a decision about a partnership. Libra, September 23 through October 22. 3 stars. Health and fitness are important considerations. Learn all you can about preventative medicine. Pay attention to what makes you feel ill or well. Companions are in a cycle of change. Do not take this personally. Tonight, refuse to give energy to individuals who disappoint you. Scorpio, October 23 through November 21. 4 stars. Love and romance are highlighted favorably today. Develop promising relationships by taking the initiative. Take time to be certain of what you truly desire. Do not commit on a whim. Tonight, interesting but erratic time with children. Sagittarius, November 22 through December 21. 3 stars. Discussions about changes concerning your residence and family life are highlighted today. Use humor and tolerance if impatience or anger builds regarding a relative. You could change your mind about how and where you want to live. Tonight, understanding with a loved one. Capricorn, December 22 through January 19. 5 stars. Your judgment is good and your mind is alert. It is a good time to attend to transportation needs. Conversations provide new perspectives. Those closest to you long to explore and grow. Everyone is ready to stretch their wings. Tonight, return calls and emails. Aquarius, January 20 through February 18. 3 stars. Thoughts revolve around adding to your earning power and perfecting a new job skill. It is easy to make adjustments and resolve long-standing financial dilemmas. Hunches and synchronicities should be heeded. Tonight, make the most of the new opportunities the universe offers. Pisces, February 19 through March 20. 5 stars. With a nature that combines romance with intuition, you are sensitive to the point of being genuinely psychic. Ongoing discussions slowly bring important information to light. A cycle of great progress begins. Active pursuits are favored. Tonight, it is your night. Born today, artist Egon Schiele, 1890, diarist Anne Frank, 1929, comedian Jim Nabors, 1930.
Thank you for joining us for the readings of the Midland Reporter-Telegram and the Odessa American. This is the Recording Library of West Texas, enriching the lives of individuals with physical, visual, and learning disabilities since 1963. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand with your computer or favorite mobile device at recordinglibrary.org.